Hi there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with the mayor of Morehead, Laura White-Brown. Laura, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me today.
We're talking about the regular city council meeting that took place earlier this week. There was a lot of things on the agenda, just a lot of business that had to be taken care of. But I wanted to talk first some things that you touched base on with your mayor's report. The first session of the One Community, One Read has wrapped up. Tell me a little bit about how that went.
It was really a successful program. We ended with about 95 people registered. So that far exceeded my expectations. We had three live Zoom and Facebook discussions where we had a lot of interaction from people reading and from the community watching the Zooms. And so it was really neat to kind of connect with people on a level of literacy instead of, you know, it wasn't about policy, it wasn't about a project, it was just kind of a fun activity, you know, to read a book together and just be able to have that conversation. We had some phenomenal guest speakers. We talked with high school students, middle school students, and even university students, as well as community members. And so it was just a really, really great opportunity. And now we're planning a spring book discussion as well.
Now, some of the other business that was discussed during the city council meeting, a lot of things are kind of changing. A lot of things have been in flex because of the pandemic. So many people are operating on kind of not knowing really what to expect or how to deal with certain things. And that has really affected municipalities and what they're able to do. One of the things that was discussed at length during last night's meeting was retention and recruiting of city employees. I know at a time like this, it's difficult. Morehead State, for example, had to cut 8% of their budget, and part of that was just not hiring new people. And unfortunately, that makes it really difficult on these organizations, including what's happening with the city. So what was the discussion that the city council had about that?
I included in my report a segment on retention and retainment. Earlier in the month, Kentucky League of Cities had their annual conference. It was all virtual this year, but there was a lot of focus for cities on retention and retainment. It's something that municipalities across the board are dealing with, and so we have to be very creative in the way that we offer incentives and what we do to really make people want to work here, but also keep the morale and work ethic up amongst employees. It's hard enough during a pandemic, and so we really need to make sure it's a priority and focus on. Some things that I learned during the KLC conference were really kind of interesting and exciting. There are a number of cities across the state who are offering paid paternity leave for employees. And so an example was, a lot of them are doing 2 weeks of paid paternity leave on top of your sick time. So you don't actually have to take that out of your sick bank. It's kind of an entirely separate buildup of hours that you have. And so for police officers and firefighters, you know, as they start families and as cities try to recruit younger people, that's something that's really important. And so I thought that was a very interesting incentive as well.
Does the city have a paid maternity leave?
No. our city.
That's ironic. That's a little ironic that we're talking about paternity leave and we're not addressing maternity leave at the same time.
I agree. No, it's your your average sick time that you would use. And the cities that are doing paternity leave, they may offer it. I'm not sure. But it is not something that our city currently has a policy on.
Okay, so the discussion also talked about the pay rate, one of the reasons that it's difficult to keep people in positions is because they're always looking for a way to increase their income. Of course, everybody wants to be sure that they can have a living wage, and that's a big concern right now, especially because a lot of people are working on just one income because of kids being virtual, et cetera, and the recession following the pandemic. So what was the discussion on pay raises?
You know, if you compare our pay scale amongst departments to surrounding communities and even across the state, we are lower paying in a lot of our departments. And so that's been a real focus of mine to try to bring us up to competitive wages, but also health insurance is a huge factor. So, you know, the city used to pay 100% of family health insurance, and that's huge. You know, that was a huge incentive because your pay might not have been as high, but your benefits were very, very good. As time went on, that has been adjusted, and employee health insurance is still paid, but family plans are not. And so I'm really making a focus to go back and look at that, perhaps restructuring, you know, can the city at least pay a percentage of family plans? Because health insurance is very expensive, and I really think to be competitive that we're going to have to look at doing that. People also probably don't know that to train and hire a new police officer, it costs the city an average of $65,000 per officer, and they only have a 3-year contract. So if we lose officers quickly and have a high turnover, it's a lot of money that's kind of flowing directly out. It takes time to develop these officers, and so we need to make sure that we keep them. And so I'm looking at pay for all employees, but specifically police, fire, and public works. They're very essential. They were named essential when the pandemic started. We've seen firsthand how much we need all of these departments. So I'm going to be proposing in an upcoming budget amendment a pay raise for all departments. I'm not looking at doing one across the board. I'm going to look at it by department, by longevity, by training, certifications. I have a number of factors to look at and really make working for the city of Moorhead very competitive.
So did the city council end up voting on this, or was this just a discussion?
This was just a discussion.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And speaking of discussion, I guess there is a lot of discussion about the public hearing for the new TIF district, and that happened a couple weeks ago. And just to recap for our listeners, there's a developer who is associated with Hamburg. Many of us are familiar with Hamburg over in Lexington, who has come in and wants to build a development in Moorhead that is similar, and that would be located kind of across 32 from the Kroger Plaza. Right now there is a mobile home park that's there. So where are we in that process?
Per state guidelines, you have to have a public hearing when developing a TIF. So that public hearing was held earlier this month as well, and there were actually no residents, no community members that attended that. So it still counts. It kind of just passes on to the next step after that. What happens now is the city works with the developer on a draft of an ordinance, and then that will go before city council. The timeline for this project is to have everything established as far as paperwork, ordinances, and resolutions by the end of the year.
Is there any timeline on that right now? I mean, as far as like when stuff can actually start moving there?
I'm not sure of the timeline. I think certain documents and the ordinances have to be filed with Frankfurt, so it kind of depends on how fast those process.
Well, we know with the current TIF board, that's in downtown, the TIF district that's downtown for that downtown hotel, it takes sometimes years to get things up and running. We haven't seen a lot of movement, although I know that there's like the historic district, something has happened or could be happening with the historic district. Can you give us any update on the downtown hotel situation?
The TIF board met in September and to kind of get an update from the developer. And the developer has also had a number of turnover with employees. And so the project has had kind of some different people coming in and out of it. And there was not much of an update. The city and the county have both requested kind of some answers, an update on the financial status of the project, an update on the deal points. You know, this project has been going on for 4 years now. And like you said, there's not been a lot of movement, especially since I came in. I'm not sure if there's been any movement. And so that's frustrating for the community and also for the board that has devoted so much time into this project. We are hoping for more of an update and kind of some information to follow at the next meeting, which will be November 5th.
Well, hopefully we'll see some movement on that senior night. I know that it's been a while, but there's some really exciting plans that are possible. So I know that a downtown hotel is definitely something people are very interested in seeing happen. Was there any discussion from tourism? I mean, I know it's kind of hard to think about tourism, but Morehead and Round County kind of offer a unique opportunity for people to come in because there is so many options for socially distanced tourism opportunities within the region. So what's happening with tourism right now?
Absolutely. You know, tourism has hit a lull because of so many travel restrictions, but our tourism commission and the tourism employees have really gotten creative. I've been very impressed with some of the information that they shared at our council meeting. One thing is that if you had a conference scheduled at their facility for a business, for a lecture, for any type of seminar, they are offering to facilitate Zoom discussions for you. So they actually have a package where you can kind of convert your in-person training to Zoom, and they have breakout sessions, they have guest speakers. And so I think that's a really great option to offer. They've also been working on a lot of outdoor projects. One that was mentioned was the Hickory Flats project, which is a piece of the trail that goes through the Sheltowee Trace. And tourism partnered with the 377 Fire Department on this project. There's an old cabin and also a fire tower that tourism is renovating, and it will be available for hikers as a hostel during their time on the trail.
Very cool. As an avid hiker myself, I think that that would be a really huge benefit because it is sometimes hard to find places. There are rules about where you can camp along the Sheltowee. You have to be like 200 feet from the trail, and like you have to have an established fire pit. Sometimes those things are hard to find, although they are pretty well marked, but it is nice to like sometimes just have a roof over your head. And that makes it a little more attractive when you have that opportunity, especially when it's kind of like you have a really good hike in and then a really good hike out. And if there's a fire tower there, I assume there's probably water, maybe?
I'm really not familiar with the area, but they said that the view is just absolutely stunning. So I really hope to get the chance to go out there and check it out soon.
Yeah, me too. I think that'll be great. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
More than a place to explore reading, the Rowan County Public Library supports lifelong learning for all ages. Open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., patrons may borrow materials with no late fees for books, CDs, DVDs, or video games. CDC recommended guidelines are followed for health and safety. Located on Beacon Hill Drive in Morehead, the Rowan County Public Library is on Facebook and online at rowancountylibrary.org. More information by calling 784-7137.
And we're back here on Open Mic here at Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Laura White Brown, the mayor of Morehead. Laura, thanks again for being with us.
I'm happy to be here.
We're talking about the city council meeting that happened earlier this week. The council had quite a few things to go through. First, in the old business, There was some discussion about the tax rate. I know during the last meeting, the council had voted to not take the compensating rate and actually not raise taxes at all. And there was a little more discussion about that this time. And tell me what the changes were that were proposed.
So last month, like you said, the city did not pass the compensating rate. They stuck with the traditional rate that we've had for the current year. After really kind of digging into this and looking at the numbers, it was my recommendation to the council that we pass the compensating rate. It ends up being about an average of $22 on a $100,000 property value. It's not a significant amount, but we know that every dollar is important, especially in the middle of a pandemic. But when you look at the big picture here, if we did not take that compensating rate, over 10 years, the city would lose $1 million of revenue. And that's pretty significant. We also, you know, would have to look at, if we don't do it this year, we may have to pass a 4% increase next year. And I'm afraid that that would hit residents even harder by having such a high rate following a pandemic. So there was some fear with that, but also we have a lot of projects going on, and I don't want this to affect the fire department project, to affect our bonding capacity. And also that equates to about $100,000 in revenue for the current year. We've been talking about retainment and recruitment, so that's money that could directly benefit employees or directly benefit essential projects that we need in the community. It did, so the second reading did not pass, and then they made a motion to accept the compensating rate. So that would be seen as the first reading, and that did pass with a 4-2 vote.
So what does that change with the upcoming budget? Will there have to be budget amendments if it does pass in the second reading?
We will do, this is kind of an annual ordinance vote that takes place. So what we will do is we'll have to have a special meeting for a second reading prior to the end of the month so that everything is ready to go for the tax bills.
And in news business, the recreation department had some things to discuss, basically just setting up recreation fees for the different facilities that the city has to offer. And those will be, were those set? Will they be posted?
They will be posted. So the park department is looking at adding some additional leagues, things like outdoor basketball tournaments, travel basketball, clinic sessions for multiple sports. And as the city ordinances go, you must have an ordinance for each fee that you collect or charge. So this kind of opens the door to expanding the programs that the park department offers. And we know that, you know, indoor sports are really hard to have. Any sports are hard to have right now during a pandemic, but we're hoping by going ahead and setting this up, if there's an opportunity to do some outdoor sports that we don't do currently, like outdoor basketball, we'll be ready to go at that time.
Is there any city-sponsored sports happening right now? I don't have kids in sports right now, so I haven't been following.
There are not. But one thing, there are two new employees in the Parks Department, and they are really phenomenal. They have taken off and really gotten engaged with the community, but also with the department. And so they've been doing things like online scavenger hunts and photo contests. They're also sponsoring the Pumpkin Glow, which is going to be on October 31st. It's going to start at 6 p.m. But what you can do is anyone can carve a pumpkin and drop it off at the city park on Friday. And then on Saturday evening, the employees are going to line the park with the pumpkins and light them with candles so that it will be a pumpkin glow. You can drive through the area and look at them, or you can walk through the area, whichever you prefer. We're just encouraging people to social distance if they do walk through the area. But you know, that's something that's different. Our community hasn't done that before. They've also set up some fall decorations as you drive around the park. If you go by at night, it's lit up kind of in the first corner there. And it's really neat, just something fun, something that is new for our area. They are planning a holiday light show. So there will be a number of lights with kind of holiday themes that will also line the park, and that will take place beginning sometime in November.
There's also like a Halloween decorating contest for the community as well. I think my neighbor is planning on entering that. But tell us a little bit about how you go about being part of that.
Judge Clark and I partnered up on that project, and we have some great sponsors, and there's some wonderful prizes that you can win. The Tourism Commission donated a basket. Judge Clark and I are putting in a cash prize. The Cave Run Rental Group has a weekend stay in a cabin by the lake, and then the Hampton Inn also donated a room. So if during the winter you want to get out of the house and you have kids, you could take them over to the Hampton Inn and they can swim, and you could just kind of have a night away without going out of town. But all you have to do is decorate your home, decorate your yard, decorate a window, whatever you prefer. You take a picture and you actually can upload it on the county's website, and then they will be shared on social media, and photos that have a lot of likes, loves, and shares will be our prize winners.
I feel like everyone's trying to be a little more creative during the pandemic, just trying to figure out how to keep people engaged. I mean, normally around, a couple weeks ago, we missed Arts and Eats Festival, which would have been a couple weeks ago, and that kind of kicked off in the fall the events. It seemed like from Arts and Eats through Christmas, there were always lots of things happening in downtown Moorhead, and that's got to be really negatively impacting the city.
It's really created an opportunity for city employees, city departments, but also community members to become creative. So we're looking at projects that we've never done before, but you have to really be kind of innovative with how you're doing things these days. Like you mentioned, there's not festivals downtown, and we know that impacts the number of customers that downtown businesses see. Businesses all around the community, not even just downtown, it affects restaurants. And so we really need to do anything we can to keep all of those businesses alive. Because like we've said in the past, these businesses and restaurants are the backbone of this community. We need them to be a standout area for people to work, live, play, and stay.
I know that there are a few new businesses that have started popping up throughout the community, but I don't know, and I don't know if you know, have we lost any businesses to the pandemic?
We actually had a report at the council meeting from the Chamber of Commerce, and they did not report a closure of businesses related to the pandemic. There are a number of new businesses popping up, which is really exciting. And I've not been to all of them yet, but I've seen them kind of circulating on social media. And so very, very excited that even during a pandemic, people are still willing to kind of take a chance, become entrepreneurs, and really invest in the community.
And hopefully we can see that continue. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have here on Open Mic. Mayor of Moorhead, Laura White Brown, thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you, Leanne.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Moorhead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.